Welcome back to this part three of these interviews with you, Christian and Leah. Today I want to talk a bit about what your experience was like when you got back from the World Cup in your footballing careers playing, and then since then how people have heard about your World Cup story, and then we'll talk a little bit about women's football in general. So my first question is, what was it like in the months after you returned from the World Cup? Leah, do you want to start?
It was trying to understand really what had happened to us, because it was all so surreal. And because there wasn't very much interest really in the country here, it was purely telling family and friends, or looking at our scrapbooks, putting scrapbooks together of what had happened to us for a whole month in Mexico City. So that in itself, looking back, was very odd. Also with school, life just went on. You went to school, you got on with school, you didn't talk about Mexico particularly. So everything just went back to how it was before. We went to both Sicily and Mexico in 71, and therefore just carried on playing at Chilton Valley in the way we had before in the leagues, and still catching two buses to training. Nothing had changed in that respect. Unfortunately, there was a ban on us when we came back. The FA, WFA had banned some of us for 3 months, some for 6 months, and I think that was dependent upon age. So that was quite ridiculous, to be perfectly honest, but we didn't, again, we were so young, we really didn't take on board the magnitude of that and probably how it affected us over the years, actually, because we really then felt we really shouldn't have gone to Mexico, because it wasn't seen to be the right thing. And however, not one of us would have changed not going. We had a fantastic squad, and it was amazing. But I think it did affect everybody in the squad differently.
Mm-hmm. That's separate then to the ban that already was on women's football. So you went during the general ban on women's football that stopped you participating on the pitches. But apart from that, when you got back from the World Cup, they put a specific ban on the team that went to Mexico.
That's right. Okay. They did. And that affected everybody differently. And I think even for Chris and I, who played for Chilton Valley, we were actually directed to join another club. It changed quite a lot in how we were playing with Chilton Valley, and that was very difficult. And therefore, being as young as we were, we made some difficult decisions, which probably would be different now.
Mm-hmm. But why were you directed to join another club then?
Because of the ban, and that they felt that Chilton Valley would no longer be sustainable, and proved over a period of time to be the case. But I think it was so that Chris and I, who played for Chilton Valley, could carry on playing. Mm-hmm. I think that was the reason for it. But looking back, it probably wasn't ideal.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so you got back from all that excitement and you had 3 months not being allowed to play football.
Yes. Well, by the time we were told, yes.
How about you, Jill? What was it like for you when you got back? Was it the same?
Yeah, it was very similar to Leah, although I still stayed with the team I was with, which was Tame Lane. I had the three-month ban the same, but then just carried on after that. You know, it didn't really, as I say, at the time I was probably, you know, really frustrated that I couldn't carry on playing for that time. Because obviously the season was just starting when we got back, and then was, you know, really itching to get going again. But yeah, that's the only thing I can think of, that, you know, the ban. And then I, as I say, I just carried on playing with Tame. So it affected me at the time, I suppose, but not to a great degree as Leah and Chris, because they had to change clubs. Mm-hmm. So with me, I just carried on as normal, really.
Mm-hmm. And how about you, Chris?
Well, because my story is similar to Leah's, but the reason we couldn't stay with Chiltern Valley, really, was because they were banning Harry for life. So he got a long ban. And at the beginning, we wanted to stay with Chiltern Valley because it was a great team. Why would we want to leave? But then when we were directed to leave was the reason that Harry was being shut down as such. Mm-hmm. He got a lifetime ban. And that was the end for him. Found out later that he did try to get the ban lifted, but they refused.
If I understand this correctly, the FA did not take a women's football team to represent England in the World Cup, but Harry stepped forward and did and represented the country. And on his return, he got banned from coaching for life for doing that.
Yeah, he did. And I think it was, and Leah would know best, but it was the WFA that initially banned us because the FA didn't come into women's football till 72. Mm-hmm. Possibly the reason for that was because they saw the success in Mexico. I don't know, I can't say sure. But it was a few years after Harry got banned that his son told us that he tried to come back into the game and they refused.
That's really bad. Yeah. So when you got back from Mexico, it sounds like there wasn't a big, people weren't making a fuss over you about your experience in the World Cup. And then a few years ago, people did start to find out about the story. So how exactly did that happen, Chris?
Well, one day I was at home and Leah rang me and her brother had, well, actually perhaps Leah should say about it, but her brother had heard about the National Football Museum. Mm-hmm. And Professor Gene Williams, and they were doing a big thing of women's football, and they had they had no knowledge about the Mexico World Cup. So he encouraged Leah to ring them up, which luckily Leah had just retired, so she had time to do it. Mm-hmm. And she rung them up and they were really interested and asked us to go up to Manchester Football Museum and talk about our experience. Mm-hmm. And that's how it started. And then the three of us, because we were still in contact, so Leah, Jill and myself, we decided to find the rest of the team. Mm-hmm. And it became important to us to find the rest of the squad and give recognition to what Harry had done for women's football. Mm-hmm. And that's been what we've been about ever since, really. Mm. Yeah.
And how long ago was that then?
It started, just to mention, there was a BBC journalist, Bill Wilson, actually wrote an article. Mm-hmm. This was, I think it was February 18, 2018. Mm-hmm. And in the article, it mentioned 10 items to the history of women's football. Mm-hmm. And I think number 8, if I remember rightly, was Mexico 71. And that's what my brother sent to me, and that's what started the ball rolling. Mm-hmm. So forever grateful for his relationship with Gene Williams, Professor Gene Williams, and the National Football Museum, which was Belinda Scarlett, because they had all the history that went into that particular article. Mm-hmm. I started talking with Chris sort of March time, and then we contacted Jill as well. And we went up in May 18, Chris and I first, to talked to the museum. Mm-hmm. And did a short video, and then Jill was on board with us, and it carried on. So it was just amazing that it happened, really. The timing was just perfect. I literally had only finished work in the December, and had I still been working, I don't think I would have followed the article up at all. So yes, it was meant to be, and we're very grateful for that. And then since then, it's been Jill, Chris and I encouraging everyone and trying to find everyone. So it's been fabulous.
Yeah, I'd just like to say that did get the ball rolling, and then we wondered how to find the rest of the girls because we didn't know how online they'd be. So we used the BBC quite a bit, to be honest, and that's how other people got on board. I don't know if you'd remember Danny Baker's show, but I decided I was going to ring up Danny Baker's show. And because of that, Ian Young's heard the show, and he got on board and he found a few of the girls. And he wrote a fantastic article about the Mexico World Cup, and it was really well received, and that's what got the ball rolling bigger. And then I think we'd lost, there were still four players to find. So then I went on Radio 4 Saturday Live, and a lady called Kat Whiteway, who's a people finder, she came on and helped us, and then that got us all on the One Show. So it was all like media attention, you know. So, and yeah, in the end, we found everybody. So.
Okay, so over the years, you had lost contact with most of the squad, apart from the three.
We hadn't seen all the rest of the squad. Maybe one or two, I think Val and that. But most of the squad we hadn't seen for 47 years.
Wow. What was that reunion like?
Jill?
Yeah, it's just, as Chris was saying, we did go through the media to try and find all the girls. Leah and I went on local radio as well and put the call out. And one by one, they were found. And yeah, it was a great piece we did. If it was for the One Show, but it was Jasmine Harmon. We had to go to Lincolnshire. Was it Leah? I'm not quite
sure. Yes, Boston, yeah. Lincolnshire.
Boston, Lincolnshire. And we got, and this was our first reunion of all the girls that we'd found. So that was really brilliant anyway, that we'd actually meet up. We knew the weren't ones, but we were still missing two of them. And then they surprised us with Jean Brecken. She came out from behind the curtain, basically, and that was brilliant. And the last one to be found was Paula Rayner. And Leah had already got a number for her and sort of been fobbed off a little bit, I believe. Paula had already been contacted by somebody else to say about this reunion. So she appeared, and Leah wasn't best pleased because she'd been fobbed off by her, and now she knew the reason why. But yeah, I mean, it was absolutely fantastic to have got us all there together. And the reason we were in Boston now, I remember, because Lillian, who's our goalkeeper, she lives not far from there, but isn't in best health. So that was the best meeting point. But yeah, it was absolutely fantastic, and you wouldn't have thought we'd have been apart at all, really, because we just got on so well. And you know, obviously we changed in our looks and appearances, obviously, but we were still the same inside, and it was great to get everybody else's recollections of Mexico, because we'd got our own, but you know, other people were remembering different things. So it was lovely to hear all their stories, and then memorabilia all came out as well. So yeah, it was fantastic to all get together after all that time. You know, how long ago? I'm not quite sure, Chris. When we started looking, when we had that meeting now, was that, what, was that 2 years after?
Yeah, I think it was just before the Women's World Cup when we met in Boston, because, yeah, the Women's World Cup came along and it just snowballed, didn't it? Mm-hmm. You know, the attention from the media was immense.
Yeah.
Know, from never talking about it. Yeah, it was crazy. It was really crazy. I mean, there was always somebody getting in contact and going, can you come here? Can you do this? Can you do that? It was quite amazing. Yeah. So, but
I don't know if you've just mentioned about Carol. It was the 3rd of June, so 2019. So this took us right up from, so if you take it March 18th, say, onwards with all what went on, mm-hmm. it wasn't till the 3rd of June we actually met our captain. And what had been done, BBC Breakfast, they'd managed to locate Carol, and Jane McGubbin had contacted Carol to meet her at Chiltern Valley's old ground in Luton. Mm-hmm. And there would be a surprise, and that she would be meeting Jan, and I think possibly yourself, Chris, is that right? Or was it Jan?
Yeah, she only knew that me and Jan knew where she was.
Where she was. Mm-hmm. So we, as many of the squad that were around then, actually went up to Chiltern Valley's old ground up in Ashcroft in Luton, mm-hmm. and surprised Carol. So that's when we found our captain. Mm-hmm. So, and she was just absolutely, well, it was a very emotional time. And I think actually for all of us that were there, unfortunately, we hadn't found Paula and Jean and Lillian at the time. But it was so important how we just all gelled, but it was very emotional. I think all of a sudden we realised between us all what an amazing thing we'd all been through together. And the scrapbooks were out and memories were shared, and it was a fabulous day actually, and lovely for Carol.
After so long not talking about it, and then like you said, I think before, Chris, you meet people and they remember things that you might have forgotten, and you remember things they've forgotten, and you probably hear stories about what happened and you're like, oh yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
In the last 2 years, what else has happened for you all? What other things have you done? Chris?
Well, I think after we'd all managed to all get together, mm-hmm. UEFA got in touch with us, and the Women's World Cup was right in the middle of it, and it was just before England were to play the USA. Mm-hmm. And UEFA got in touch with us and said they wanted to take us to the game in Lyon. So we only had it was just me in contact with the UEFA girl, and we had to get everybody's passports, everybody's details, get it all together in I don't know if Leo will remember, but it was only a couple of days.
Mm-hmm. And yeah,
we had to do it all in a couple of days. And all the girls were coming from all over different parts of England, like Cornwall, Norfolk. And we all had to meet at Euston Station, and we all got on the Eurostar. And off we went to Lyon all together on the train. And travelling like we travelled all those years ago. And I think that was quite emotional, getting to the station and we were all there, and, you know, mm-hmm. It was brilliant. And it was fantastic. I think there was just a couple of girls that couldn't go for certain reasons, but mostly it was most of the squad.
Wow.
And it was busy and full on. And as we were travelling there was loads of interviews with different media people that because it was all the World Cup attention, etc. And so when we came back, we wanted to have our own private reunion. So we organised one. And then we had lockdown. So we had to cancel it. And we haven't got ever personally since then, really.
We've never met. The problem we have never met as a whole squad.
No.
The 14 of us have never been together all as one. But I think it's also worth, with the Leon trip, Jill will recollect this as well. We were so lucky to be taken by UEFA to watch the Women's World Cup. It was just incredible. But Jill and I decided to go to Le Havre to see Argentina, England, because we felt that was quite poignant and important to us. It was an opportunity we didn't want to miss. So Jill and I went to Le Havre to watch England versus Argentina. And I think I'll hand over to Jill, because the most amazing thing happened while we were there. And it's just something we're going to cherish for the rest of our lives. So over to Jill, really. Would you like to tell the Le Havre story?
Yeah, it's quite an amazing story, really. As Leah said, we caught the ferry over to Le Havre, and another friend of ours was going to meet us the next day. Mm-hmm. I think it was the next day, wasn't it, Leah? Was it the same day?
Yes, it was. Yes.
Anyway, she was coming on the Eurostar. But Leah and I got confused somewhere along the way, thinking she was coming on the ferry. So we got on a tram to go down to the ferry station, and we got off the tram, both realised at that time she was coming in at the train station. So we got back on a tram, round to the train station. We walked into the station and waiting, looking around, and couldn't see our friend. And then there was a group of women coming through, and they'd all got the same T-shirts on, as if they were a team, but older ladies, say older, same age as us. Mm-hmm. And
very young.
So I said to Leo, I says, I think they're the Argentinian women's team. So some, you know, they just looked at it, and Leo says, no, it can't be. But they'd got a film crew with them. Uh-huh. And so Leo says, you go and stand over there and I'll take a picture of you so I can get him in the background. So I'm stood there posing, and Leah took the photograph. Anyway, they were all gathering in the station, and I was pretty sure it was them. But anyway, we hadn't met our friend, so we just missed her. She'd gone off to go to the hotel. So anyway, we went back out of the station to get on a tram. Whilst waiting for the tram, this team came out of the station and they were being filmed. And I said to Leah, I know it's them, I'm sure it's them, go and ask them. So Leah went over and asked the people that were filming, is this the Argentinian women's team from 71? And they said, yeah. And Leah says, well, Jill and I played for England in 71. They couldn't believe it. They were so amazed. And they grabbed us and hugged us and took pictures and everything. They couldn't believe that, you know, they'd met somebody from England team that played them all those years ago. So, as I always say, it was a sliding doors moment. On and off the tram, in and out of the station, still missed our friends, but met up with the Argentinian girls, which is
it was meant to be.
Amazing. Yeah, it was.
It was meant to be.
It was meant to be. And we were reminded of our scoreline, and one of the players that was there had pleasure in reminding us of that she'd scored the goals, and but it was lovely. It was fantastic. It was the most.
They couldn't, we couldn't obviously talk Argentine, and they couldn't talk English, but she kept saying, four. I said, yeah, okay, we know.
Yeah, we can remember.
Yeah, we don't bear any grudges.
No.
So that was, fantastic. And the game, you know, we went to the game. But going back to the UEFA one, you know, that was an all-expenses trip paid as well. On the Eurostar, the hotel, getting to and from the game and everything. I mean, it was obviously a flying visit. Mm-hmm. We stayed the one night and then had to travel all the way back, you know, the next day. But yeah, it was a lot of highs and lows in that game as well, obviously, missing a penalty and things like that. And the next morning, then Leah and I, Chris was there, but Leah and I went on to the breakfast TV down in Lyon. This was about 7 o'clock in the morning, I think. So we'd only had about 3 hours sleep.
Yeah.
Just, to, you know, giving our opinion on the game and that and what happened. So, yeah, I mean, it was a great time. And all the girls, it was just fantastic to be there again with all the girls and reliving it. And we had VIP seats and a box and everything. So, you know, it was amazing that that all came from, you know, us being found as the Mexico 71 squad. It was quite amazing.
When our story has come out, people have found it quite emotional.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what most people say, is how it's made them feel emotional. And I hope in a good way as well, really, rather than a sad way, because we had, you know, we had this opportunity and we took it. Mm-hmm. So we're happy that we did do it.
Mm-hmm. I can see why people say that, because it's very shocking, the story. When you hear it now, you know, you've lived through it and you've spoken about it now quite a lot. But when people hear that story for the first time and what happened to you, like just even today, talking about the fact you got back from doing that and you were actually banned from playing football, which just seems ridiculous to do to like young girls that enjoy playing football, to ban them from it. It's like very shocking to hear. So I can understand why people say that it's emotional, because
okay. Can I just say with going to Lyon, an important point that I think we'd all like to make, UEFA were just incredible, as Jill's already said, and we actually went on they brought us over for their, it was part of their campaign,
mm-hmm.
Together We Play Strong.
Mm-hmm.
And it was very important that they could understand a story and the significance of it in the women's game.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's nearly 50 years ago. So I just thought it's important for people to understand how supportive UEFA were.
Mm-hmm.
And I think they realised that we were just wanting to embrace the women's game, the girls' game, and try to inspire young girls and women to play now.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that is all we do want to do.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's important to us. And I agree with what Leah said there. It's important to us that our story is heard by young people that have dreams.
Mm-hmm.
So we don't want to keep quiet anymore.
Yeah, good. You shouldn't. Well, it sounds like UEFA were really, really supportive in that. And they've been a big help then, obviously, in sharing this story and giving a platform to talk about it on. Maybe on a contrasting note, how about the FA since then here in England? Have you sort of received any recognition or apology maybe for what happened? Leah?
We haven't received anything written, or we were invited to the England Germany game at Wembley.
Mm-hmm.
And we were invited by the FA, and we had a box at that game. And up until that point, we had had no contact with the FA. They, for some reason, didn't really want to recognise the Mexico 71 World Cup. Be it official, unofficials, absolutely, from our perspective, is it really isn't important. It happened. It showed a part of the women's game. So really, we could never understand their take on it. And it was a difficult time, I know, for them, but it was very difficult for Harry Batt, and that's probably another section all by itself.
Mm-hmm.
Because however people want to look at it, Harry Batt and his wife June, And their family gave so much to women's football. And a lot of women were so lucky to have experienced from 1969 to 1972 travelling abroad with him. So it's a shame that the FA for some reason just wouldn't recognise it. However, we were spoken to at half time at that game, and Sue Campbell came in and did talk to us, and actually it was an apology that nothing had been said before, but I think it's just, can we just move on from it, but have it understood it existed? We're not looking for anything else apart from people recognising that it happened.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And recognising... Perhaps women's football would have moved a lot quicker. And I really feel quite strongly, and I think all the girls will agree with this.
Yeah.
Had Harry and the FA at the time, WFA, got together more and got Harry to use his contacts and his ability to just make things happen,
mm-hmm.
They shut it down. And really, it's taken an awful lot of years for this to catch up.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
It shouldn't have taken nearly 50 years for women's football. Well, let's say 40 years. The last 5-10 years, slowly but surely, things are improving.
Mm-hmm.
But it could have been a lot sooner.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, I think, like, you know, the FA talks about now wanting to grow the women's game. Let's think about Harry, for example. He was the one that enabled so many girls to play. And they banned him for life. So, you know, no one's going to be able to change what happened, but I think it will be it would make a lot of sense for the FA to kind of acknowledge it and recognise it and use it, because that is the history of women's football. You are the history of women's football. And, you know, it's not like women's football started in 72 when the ban ended. It started way before that, even though they weren't recognising what was going on.
Yeah.
It's important, I think, to all of us and the whole squad that Harry Batt gets recognition for what he did contribute to women's football.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And the vision he had in the 60s and 70s is absolutely amazing.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely amazing.
Yeah, someone that was so passionate about women's football.
Yeah, yeah. He believed in women being able to play football. It's that simple.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's a very simple story and a very simple belief, which is how people would probably see it today. Well, of course, girls play football, we can see today.
Mm-hmm.
Still needs to be a lot more work with grassroots, etc. But what a vision to have in those days, in the 60s and 70s.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely.
When we were in Boston for the one show, we had a recorded message given to us after we'd found Paula and Jean for the squad that were there from Jill Scott from the current England ladies team, and thanking us for our contribution to women's football for all those years ago, which actually meant a great deal to all the women that were there from our Mexico 71 squad.
How then would you reflect on that whole experience, the World Cup, what's happened since then, your football experience altogether? Quite a big question. How do you reflect on it, Chris?
Well, as I've said before, I think in our case, we were very lucky that we were in the right place and the right time and to have the experience we had. And I don't think I could have been in a better position, mm-hmm. in my football career,
mm-hmm.
well, if you call it a career, for what the experience we had. And I believe that in some ways it was better then, because we were left to our own devices as such. We weren't we played football for the football reasons and not for commercialisation or stereotyping people. We were just there playing for the love of the game. Mm-hmm. If I have any regrets, it's perhaps that I packed up earlier than, you know, because I remember having a conversation with my nephew. We used to be season ticket holders and he used to play on a Sunday. And then when he got older, he had to play on a Saturday. And he said, what shall I do? Shall I carry on watching football or shall I play? And I said to him, play as long as you can, because mm-hmm. you can watch football all your life. Mm-hmm. But you can't play all your life, so
well, it's not too late, is it?
Huh?
It's not too late.
Play walking football.
Yeah, well, actually, Louise, one of our, one of the squads, she does do walking football.
Yes, she does.
Because when I was 41, I played in indoor football from my works team, uh-huh. and I got a trophy player of the tournament, and I was all showy offy about it, thinking, oh, nobody's going to have a trophy, like, you know, none of the girls are going to have one in their 40s. Uh-huh. And there's Louise, she won one about 6 months ago. And Jan Ems, she's won loads of trophies playing badminton. So, so I've just shoved it back in the cupboard now.
How about you, Jill?
I mean, as Chris was saying, you know, we loved our football back then as well. You know, it was for the love of the game. And I was just fortunate. I didn't get injured that much. And I played in most games that I could. And, you know, I've had a daughter in between playing that as well, you know, alongside. So nothing would stop you playing if you wanted to play. Mm-hmm. But there you go. I wouldn't change anything the way I played my football and the chances I had to play it.
And how about you, Leah?
I think Jill and Chris have said it all, really. It's just been it was a fantastic time to play. You never lose the love of kicking a ball. It doesn't matter what age you are. Mm. I've said it many times. Someone rolls a ball to you, the first thing you do is flick it up and kick it. I think it's fantastic for the young girls and women now, how the game is going. It's developing, you know, we'd like it all to go a bit quicker, but then sometimes the best things take longer. So we'll just see it develop and it will become a natural part of women's sport. And that's really what it should be. It should just be another sport that women and girls can play, mm-hmm. like all the other sports. And when it reaches that and there's no stigma at all to it, everyone's achieved their little bit that they played over the years.
How, in your opinion, has women's football progressed since you played? So talking about grassroots football or professional football, what do you think about that, Chris?
Well, I think because of social media, it's helped tremendously. It's not like when we were young and we've all said, oh, we thought we were the only girl footballer when we were little. Now you can go on social media, you can join a team, and yeah, things have changed tremendously because of that. And that is the reason, the attention. If social media had been around when we came back from Mexico, people would have known about it.
True.
But because it was just newspapers, etc., everything was owned by, if they didn't want to report it, that was it. Mm-hmm. You didn't get reported about, so it's a difference.
Yeah. I think one thing I do want to say, just relating to like what you're saying about media coverage and things like that. So the women's game does have so much more media coverage, but I think it's really important that people are aware of the fact that a lot of the time still, it's media coverage doesn't talk about female footballers' skill, but actually it talks about how people look, and like women's footballers these days still have to look a certain way to be and play football. I mean, I'm not saying they have to look a certain way, but there's a pressure on women that play football now to look a certain way. And I think if you just go into Google and type in women's football, women's soccer, the first pictures you will get up have got nothing to do with play football.
Yeah, I think that is the worst thing about it, to be honest.
Mm.
You're right. I think you should be judged on your ability and nothing else. But sadly, you have to look a certain way.
Mm-hmm.
And I know you've got to be role models and this, that and the other, but it doesn't matter. If you've got the ability, mm-hmm. if you're the best player in England, you should have that England shirt on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Just saying about looking a certain way, do they don't look at it in the men's game the same way, do they?
Exactly. Like, I think as women, there's like a double pressure on you. Like, you have to be a good footballer, but that has to also be in line with you looking a certain way and sort of playing that role of, you know, being on TV and people looking at you. And it still is like that 100%, and that is something that really needs to change.
I mean, if you look back on team photographs through the years, how it has changed, you know, you'd get a bunch of girls together, they were all in the same kit, but they were all individuals.
Yeah,
we weren't all the same mold. Mm-hmm. But now, like you're saying, you have to look a certain way.
Mm-hmm.
That shouldn't be in the women's game. Mm-hmm. They should be treated as individuals and on their skill levels.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, definitely.
What would you say to girls and women that are considering playing football, Chris?
I would say go for it. It's the best thing you'll ever do. It will keep you fit. It keeps you focused. It can bring you a lot of things apart from football. Don't ever let anybody put you off. And if you've got a dream, you go for it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Jill?
Yeah, exactly that, Chris. You know, if the girls want to play from a young age, just encourage them as much as you can. Because as I know, that's all I wanted to do, and nobody was going to discourage me. You'd get a few remarks, but now I think the opportunities are there for the girls.
Mm-hmm.
There's so many openings it can make for you.
Mm-hmm.
Lifelong friends, being part of a team, as Chris said, focused, and it gives you a purpose, a reason, something to look forward to as well. It's just great, just mm-hmm. really great to be a part of.
And Leah, what about you?
Again, I think Chris and Jill have said it all. I think it's just important that whether you're female or male, if you have a passion for a sport or a hobby, you should follow it. You should do what you want to do, be committed. It gives you discipline. It team sports, you like, again, Jill and Chris have said, lifelong friends.
Mm-hmm.
It gives you, teaches you resilience. Certainly it will give you confidence.
Mm.
It's just something that you just need to embrace and not worry about what people say, that be an individual. And enjoy it. If you want to play a sport, you should play a sport. And girls and women should play football and enjoy it for what it is. And be the best you can, which will be all you can do.
Well, thank you all so much. That's the end of these three chats. It's been so interesting to talk to you all. I already knew quite a lot about your story, obviously, but just to like talk over it and find out more about it, and it's an amazing story. And I really hope that more and more people find out about it and can hear about what you've done, because it's fantastic and it's so inspirational for girls and women playing football to hear about your story, the challenges that you've been through and your experiences in general. So thanks so much for doing the interviews.
Thank you, Ella, for having the interest and wanting to put the story out there. That's important to all of us, and the squad are listening to these and they'll be thrilled. And yeah, we can't thank you enough. And I hope if it inspires one young girl to play and carry on, so that would be fabulous.
Thank you very much, Ella. Yeah, it's been brilliant talking about it all.
Yeah.